your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
Welcome to Special Presentation with Mike and Ethan, or
Elf Will Not Be Seen Tonight.
Happy Easter, or Happy April Fool's Day. Sorry, I was April fooling you that it was still Easter. Maybe. I don't know. Depends when you're listening to this.
Oh, you really got me. Oh, boy, yeah. Is my face red.
Yeah, oh well. At least there's still plenty of peeps left at the store. Yeah, because it's April 1st, we decided to look at a story that actually takes place on April 1st. It's been a long time since we had a look at our friends the Foobs, so it's another For Better or For Worse special.
Yeah, what was the last one? The one with the bestest present, wasn't it? Like a Christmas one?
Yeah, the Christmas episode with the... Elizabeth forgetting her bunny at the store or something. It's been a long time, man.
Yeah, I remember there was a cranky janitor, from the old country. Well, we're back in Fooble, Sylvania, aka Canada, the Great White North. Again look at the Foobs. I think one of the things that I've learned in doing this podcast is to more of an appreciation for things that I don't like but are done well for what they are. Because we've talked about Lynn Johnston, and I think just last week when we were talking about her, or a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the folks behind the Funnies, and we were talking about how she's probably one of the most... the biggest talents of the comics page, even though she gets, I think, very little respect outside of the biz.
Yes.
Because it's very obvious that, like, other cartoonists recognize her talent and innovation. But I think outside in the wider world, people just don't see it because it kind of fades into the background because she's just that good at what she does. She makes it all look so natural, you know?
And, of course, you know, being a cartoonist doesn't get you any fame in the outside world, apart from, you know, I think the only time I ever heard anything about that was that Burke Brennan said that a grocery clerk threw a free can of Pam into his grocery bag because she recognized his name on the check.
Yeah, that is such a weird thing about, like, cartooning is, you are basically, in theory... at least the height of newspaper cartooning in the 80s and 90s, you were a household name. Like, millions of people read your comic every day. Like, you couldn't get that kind of exposure even on, like, television or movies. You know, there was literally nothing else where people were... You had that much exposure, and yet most people would not, you know... You yourself were not in the public eye. I think occasionally cartoonists would appear, like, on... You know, like David Letterman or Johnny Carson, because Kathy Jizowitz appeared on that once. And it was such an odd thing to think that they brought, like, cartoonists on for interviews, you know?
I mean, that's... You might remember that in the 70s and 80s, there were all those American Express commercials where they were like, everyone knows my name, but not everyone knows my face. That's why I carry American Express. And Jim Davis was on one of those.
Oh, yeah. Jim Davis, again, he's someone who, I mean, everyone knows Jim Garfield, but, you know, whenever I see Jim Davis, it's always like, oh, yeah, I forgot that there's a man behind the cat, you know?
You know, he's an astonishingly ordinary-looking man. He does have a bit of an infectious smile, but that's about it. And Jim Davis is one of the, you know, no offense to Jim Davis, but it's one of the most non-entity names ever.
Yeah, that's true. He's almost like he's like Tony Hawk of the comics page. You know? Like people probably be like, "Hey, Jim Davis, you related to the Garfield guy?" Yeah, I am the Garfield guy. Yeah, sure you are. All right, move it along. But Lynn Johnston, she's someone who I think we discussed before, like her innovation is, she's a good artist, like a really good artist for the comics mm-hmm. page, especially when you compare what most of the stuff on the comics page, people like Mel Lazarus and Gary Larson and Charles Schulz, you know, fine cartoonists, but not especially good artists. And Lynn Johnston is obviously a talented artist as well as being yes. a cartoonist.
Very talented draftsperson. Just, looking at the perspectives that she puts into her comics when she lays out a background or something. You know, when you look at For Better or For Worse, and when it's especially like a really action filled one with like Farley or Mr. B running around the house, you know, she puts a lot of love into all the details, so it really hits home that these animals are destroying the house.
Yes. Yeah. She's not someone like Scott Adams who clearly hates drawing. She puts a lot of, there's a lot of expression, a lot of emotion, a lot of very dynamic art. Mm-hmm. Obviously she also has over the years touched on some pretty, important and dramatic issues.
Yes.
She's not afraid to like bring things up that a lot of other cartoonists probably would not touch with a 10-foot pole. Mm-hmm. We've discussed the Lawrence coming out as gay as being like a pretty pivotal storyline in mm-hmm. For Better or For Worse.
And as well as the comics page itself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was like big, just like, you know, that I would, that is up there with like Franklin appearing in Peanuts, I think.
Yeah.
In terms of, changing American culture.
I would call Lawrence and Lynn Johnston stepping out up in favor of gay rights as kind of the, you know, an inverse of the J.K. Rowling of its day.
Yes. No, I would agree with that. I think that is, it's hard. You know, it's interesting because it's kind of, it's not remembered that much, I think, in the general public.
No,
but at the time it was a really big deal, and I think mm-hmm. it really signaled the sea change in American culture that was the acceptance of of queer rights, really kind of making it mainstream. Because it's like, look, this is in the daily newspaper. If something's in the daily newspaper, in the comics page, by definition, it cannot be controversial or upsetting in any way. So therefore, this is now acceptable. Because culture works in these weird ways where it's kind of like self-reinforcing. So
yes.
Where
it goes from something being, nobody accepts it, and then a couple of, major forces step up, and then suddenly it's like everyone accepts it. There's a sort of saltation, as to use an evolutionary term. There are jumps. A sort of punctuated equilibrium. And now you can't admit that you were, it's very rare that someone will admit that they were against, say, gay marriage in the first place. Unless it's red meat for their base.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. But Lynn Johnston, because it's in the newspaper and it's a comic strip and it's, For Better or For Worse, it's kind of, it's kind of faded into the background since. We don't remember it. I don't think most people remember mm-hmm. it as a pivotal moment in, gay rights, though. I believe it really was. When you say the inverse J.K. Rowling, I think you really hit the nail on the head, because it's the same sort of thing where it's like, for Lynn Johnston coming out in favor of gay rights, I think was a huge step, like everyone realizing like, oh, okay, this is a thing now. This is a thing you can be. We can agree on now. Whereas J.K. Rowling was like the first person to kind of come out and be like, okay, we're gonna mainstream transphobia,
Yeah, like, and like I think there's a certain element of surprise on both of them, because, you know, if you didn't know better, you would think that, you know, with its, you know, cis-normative portrayal of a mom and dad and three kids, you would think that For Better or For Worse was fairly conservative. And I think a lot of her fans did think that. So to have her come out and say, no, I stand with this young man who is living his life as best he can. And a lot of people were very surprised by it. They're like, I didn't think that would come from you. Just as a lot of people who grew up with the Harry Potter books and, you know, Harry being mistreated by his family for being different, were like, you know, we did not expect this of you, Joanna.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it would be exaggerating to say that if J.K. Rowling had not started this thing, we would not be in this cultural moment right now.
It's entirely possible, yeah.
Like,
or at least this would be a differently flavored cultural moment.
Right, right. I mean, I think things would still be. Things would probably still be bad in many ways, and I'm sure that like a lot of the things that have led us to this moment were like set in motion a long, long time ago, and we're just seeing them play out now. But specifically, you know, trans people being kind of the heavy focus of this whole thing. I think that's entirely because J.K. Rowling kind of like. She's like, look, your friendly children's book writer says it's okay to like be a bigot, so we can all be bigots now. Because the thing is, like, she wasn't the first, because like, what's his face, the Father Ted guy was doing it before.
Yeah,
but like, it did not get traction when he was doing it. Everybody recognized this guy is a lunatic, but when J.K. Rowling did it, she had too much clout. So people were like, oh, well, we can't just say she's a lunatic. She did Harry Potter, you know?
Yeah. And people, you could argue, have more clout, have tried to, have tried to tamp it down. You know, I mean, Patrick Stewart has been an ally for, you know, literal decades, generations. He appeared in the Comedy Central Out special as giving a gay positive message, but the genie is out of the bottle now.
Yeah, it's well, I hope she's proud of herself. I don't why would I say that? I act like, oh, I can shame her, I'm gonna shame her, and then she'll feel bad.
Her every day, and she's just like, you know what, sorry, I can't hear you over my $1 billion.
Yeah, she's, man, I wish I had $1 billion, because I'd put it to better use. If I had a castle, I would be building fucking trap doors in that thing, you know?
building trap doors and all kinds of things to make ghosts go around, and, you know, and put up a sign that says, "Word Roar, Rots of Ruck."
Yeah. I want one of those bookshelves where you pull out the book and it spins around, you know?
Yeah. There are so many fun things to do with a castle.
God, I can't believe that, like, she's got a castle and she's just wasting that opportunity. What's she doing in her castle all day? Probably not putting cool things in it, because I feel like if she was, she'd probably be posting about it, you know? Like, if I had a castle and I was like, guess what? I just built like a fucking grotto in it so you can sail through in little sailboats that look like swans so I can hear the opera that I personally commissioned from fucking Wagner, you know, then, you know, I'd be posting about it. Now, see, Ludwig II, that's a man who knew what to do with a castle.
I thought you were doing the thing from the Addams Family, all the stuff that they had to do to get to the vault.
Oh yeah, that's right, because that was a pretty cool castle too, and that's not even a full castle. That's more like a mansion, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Presumably a haunted mansion.
That's interesting. Do they actually have we ever seen a ghost in the Addams Family house?
The one thing I always remember is. When one from an episode of the show where some where I think Pugsley was struggling with some sort of fear, and Gomez says something like, oh, he's just like my cousin Blob. All his life, cousin Blob was afraid of ghosts. Now he's one himself.
Oh, yeah. Well, also, today, I feel like they're having times when, like, in the Addams Family graveyard, stuff comes up out of the ground.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe that's just in the movies. I don't know if those are considered canonical.
They dig things up intentionally, but I don't know if things come up out of the ground on their own.
Yeah. Well, I guess a big question is, like, as always, whether or not we consider the Lurch to be an actual Frankenstein or just a Frankenstein-looking dude, you know?
I would wager the second one. I don't think he was specifically made from body parts, not like Herman Munster.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're correct. I just remembered there's an episode of the TV series where we meet his mother and she's just, you know, normal.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
assuming she didn't build him, yeah.
That's true. I don't know if they actually say. I think that... Well, okay, so the Addams Family, there's a lot of mysteries. I don't think we'll ever know 100% yes. whether or not they're supernatural or not, because...
No. The Pattersons are not supernatural. They're not even resistant to aging.
Oh, that's right. We forgot to mention that Lynn Johnston also ages her characters like Gasoline Alley, which
yes.
is, we discussed last time with the Focus on the Funnies, is actually like much more difficult than you would think, because you really have to like subtly change the way you draw the characters over time.
Yeah.
And also a lot of your storylines are going to have to kind of be plotted out like kind of far in advance to really to work. Plus it's interesting to think like, okay, did she have a character in mind for April when April was a baby? Like, did she know what adult April would be like, or did that just happen naturally over the course of, you know, drawing it?
Yes. That's kind of a interesting thing about April. The cartoon that we watched, A Storm in April, is the story of April's birth. And April, as we've talked about this before, is the only member of the Patterson family who does not have an analog in the Johnston family. Instead, she's more sort of Lynn Johnston piping her own childhood into this world. So which is kind of why April became much more of a focal character as it went on, because Lynn was seeing things through her eyes as well as through Ellie's.
Interesting. I know that, like, back in the sunset years of the For Better or For Worse comic strip, when it started getting a lot of, you know, online attention from certain quarters.
Yes.
Thinking, you know, Comics Curmudgeon, I think the Something Awful comics thread, probably a couple other places as well.
One of my favorites is the Short Pack strip that was titled, where it was a For Better or For Worse episode. Strip, but the title was My Mother is Effing Insane.
Oh, that's right. Those were the years when Ellie became kind of obsessive about Elizabeth marrying Anthony, I think.
Yeah. There was another character that she had her eyes on, who was like, I don't know, a helicopter pilot or something.
And, yeah, I remember that. He was a helicopter pilot.
Okay, or am I just thinking of... Okay, am I just confusing it with the movie Inside Out, or was that... Or are they actually making a reference to it with the movie Inside Out?
Oh, why, was there a helicopter pilot in Inside Out?
Yeah, in Inside Out, there's a running gag where we cut into the mom's own, council of emotions, and they look back on this memory of a helicopter pilot leaning out and saying, come with me.
Maybe that was a Foob reference. I don't know. Well, I mean, but then again, I think we can all agree that, like, yeah, look, helicopter pilot is a pretty sexy profession. I think if you met a helicopter pilot, you would just be smitten. I mean, that's just a given, because, you know, imagine it's like, oh, I'm a helicopter pilot. I fly through the wild blue yonder on adventures, and I probably put out fires and rescue animals and stuff, you know?
Oh my god, take me, Airwolf!
I mean, it's I gotta say, like, that sounds pretty okay to me. I mean, I think if I met a helicopter pilot, I'd be like, oh, take me away. Take me away, Calgon. I want to fly
Isn't it weird that a helicopter pilot seems sexier than just an airplane pilot?
I think so, because I feel like if you said an airplane pilot, I'd be like, that's basically just a glorified taxi driver. I mean, that's a bus driver, basically, just in the sky, you know? That's not hot. I mean, whatever. But like a helicopter pilot, like, well, that's a life of adventure. Like that guy, that guy's rugged. He probably has a mustache. But like, no. Like a plane pilot would have a mustache, but it would look like a dad mustache. And a helicopter pilot has like the horseshoe mustache and probably a lot of stubble of the rest. So like you see him and you're like, that's a man's man. That's a manly man's man.
And you know they both wear those aviator glasses that you can't see the eyes through, but it just looks so much better on the helicopter pilot.
That's true.
For real.
Also, here's the thing. I could imagine a lady helicopter pilot much easier than I could imagine like a plane helicopter pilot, you know?
A male helicopter pilot.
I mean, it's not that I'm not lady, that they don't exist.
Or a lady plane pilot, right.
A lady plane pilot, sorry. I mean, obviously there are lady plane pilots too, but like I just feel like the fact that like planes are kind of like, oh, it's like a business and there's like kind of the old boys club and like, you know, the glass ceiling that like you wouldn't see that as much. But in the rugged world of helicopter piloting, like I could imagine like, you know, some tough broad, you know, just flying around with a whirly bird.
Well, helicopters do not have a tradition of stewardesses. So that's probably it. There isn't that expectation of a gender balance there. It's like, pilots are male and stewardesses are female. And then they have a certain mating ritual like this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I can understand why Elizabeth was so taken with this helicopter pilot. Now, I know the events of the strip were obviously pushing Elizabeth to be with Anthony, and I think that ultimately played out, and she did marry Anthony in the end. I don't remember if Ellie as a character was pushing for that as well, but
I don't believe that was what happened to the actual member of the Johnston family. I think she was the one who actually said the words, "My mother is effing insane."
Oh wait, in real life?
Yeah.
Oh. Wow. Okay. I guess there may be some tension inside the Johnston household.
Yes. It's also pretty well known that after they divorced, the father character, Mr. Patterson, became progressively dumber in the strip. Even though they didn't actually divorce in the strip.
Yes, I do remember that. Another thing that is often said is that, or was said at the time, was that April kind of became this character that, like, to some degree felt like was getting, I don't know if it was getting short shrifted or just kind of like became kind of a punching bag. And it seemed to be like, because she wasn't based on a real character, she could kind of get like pushed around a little more. I don't remember if that is accurate though, because I just remember people saying that.
It makes sense because, you know, if you see your mother, you know, putting you through something bad on the comics page, you're like, did I do something wrong? So, you know, she had the freedom to abuse April in ways that she couldn't with her son and daughter.
Yeah. So I guess Elizabeth, the real life Elizabeth, sounds like she's got some tension with her mother. I know that like Michael in the strip also kind of got weird toward the end. He became like very, I remember the when he runs into the burning building to save his manuscript.
He became this crazy frustrated writer.
Yeah. And I remember cause they were like a lot of like Zalgo edits of that one. And then of course we all remember those of you, Pepperidge Farm remembers this, the infamous "I have no home" strip.
I don't think I remember that one. Tell me.
Oh, that was like that was when Anthony was Elizabeth and Anthony were like commiserating, and Anthony starts crying because his wife is cheating on him, right? You know, because this was introduced so that it would not seem like sordid that he was technically cheating on his wife now with Elizabeth, I guess. But like she says something to the effect of like, you know, you should probably go home, and he's all wailing like to the heavens, I have no home. And I remember like this was the strip that launched 1,000 photo edits. But then they did ultimately get married, and I think everyone who was following the Foobs at that point, which was probably only the Comics Curmudgeons readers, I think were pretty disappointed with that. But this was also in the days when you could do something and it didn't really matter what people on the internet thought. Like, you weren't going to be getting death threats over it, you know? Like, try that nowadays. Try that nowadays. Wow, Rian Johnson would be canceled if she tried to do that today. Wow. She's been silent. She'd have to go on a multi-campus tour to tell everyone about that. Anyway, so that's a little bit of the history of the Foobs, the comic strip, yeah. I guess, bringing us all back up to speed. The important thing is there's the Johnston family, which is actually they're the Johnstons in the strip, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah.
They're the Pattersons.
The Pattersons. Yeah.
The Pattersons. So the Pattersons in the strip, it's Ellie, who's the mom. There's a dad. I don't know what his name is. Is it John?
I can never remember his name. John. Ellie and John are the husband and wife, and then they have their sons, Michael, Elizabeth, and April. And this is a story where April is what, one or two? She only says one cohesive sentence in this.
Yes.
Mostly, she's just sort of babbling. So I'm not sure how old she's supposed to be, but it seems to be mostly Ellie reminiscing on the birth of April and being, you know, and kind of looking, you know, kind of looking dreamy as she thinks about how uncomfortable pregnancy was. And you're like, oh, really, Ellie? Tell me more.
Yeah. So there's a lot of Prego material in this episode. In fact, actually, it was funny watching it because, like, something about the way it's like drawn, I was like, is John Patterson supposed to be a Prego fetishist? Because that's really what's coming across in some of these scenes to me.
Oh, the scene where they go to the birthing classes.
Yes, exactly. The way he's just kind of acting and like, I don't know, there's something about it. I was like, yeah. It was when I just saw it, I was like, that is something about his behavior in that scene. I was like, that is the horniest that a Canadian dad can be. That's just what's coming across to me here. But, you know, I mean, if you're into pregnancy, I think for better or for worse, back in the old days before the internet, for better or for worse, is probably like a treasure trove of pregnancy related material. Yeah.
Well, I am, and I would say that for better or for worse is second. You know, it's up there, but the best one was Jumpstart.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That scans.
Yes. Of course, to this day, the single best one of all time is fucking Kevin and Kel.
Really?
Fucking everyone gets pregnant in Kevin and Kel. All the time. You know, and that's, even when somebody isn't, they'll make some sort of joke about it. Like, somebody will be drawing, and they're like, ooh, I'm getting an idea, and suddenly the pencil has a belly, and it's going, it's time!
That, okay, well, that is a, Kevin Kell is a furry comic, isn't it?
Yes. So, but, of course, this also shows up in his non-furry comic, Safe Homes, or Safe Havens.
Gotcha. Well, I think, like, so his, it's funny, because, I feel like, yeah, that definitely that's a thing for him. And Kevin and Kel, he was like, I can do the pregnancy thing, but I can also do the vor thing now. Because there's a lot of vor in Kevin and Kel as well. Oh my God, it's the free vor pregnancy comic.
Yeah, and often it's pregnant vor. You know, two for one.
It's unfortunate they've never made a Kevin and Kel cartoon, as far as I know, because
it really is. Yeah,
yeah. We could. Well, you know what? I bet some furries made one, but we'll talk about that some other time. As it is, I do remember I have seen on the internet. Well, if you go to DeviantArt, which is a website still on the internet, I feel like a good maybe third to possibly a half of all the pregnancy art is just photoshopped for better for worse strips, where they're just like, what if Ellie was like, you know, 20 months pregnant with quintuplets, you know? But I do think because they do, in For Better or For Worse, really emphasize a lot of the small discomforts of pregnancy, which I assume is part of the charm of being into this. Yes. You know,
well, I mean, the thing about For Better or For Worse is that it evolved from pregnancy comics. I mean, I think I might have told this story before, but basically when she was expecting her first baby, Lynn Johnson spent so much time with her legs in stirrups at the obstetrician that she told the obstetrician, you know, why don't you have any cartoons or anything up here for us to look at while we're staring at the ceiling? And he said, are you going to draw me some? And she was like, maybe I will. So the next time she saw him, she brought a bunch of like one panel cartoons that she'd drawn, and he put them up on the ceiling. And then she kept doing it. And then like when the baby was like 3 months old, he said, come here. And he brought her this giant stack of cartoons she'd drawn and said, you know what you got here? You've got a book. And it became the book David We're Pregnant, which was her first cartoon collection, her first real publication as a cartoonist, and it led to the birth of For Better or For Worse.
Man, you know, it's always funny when you hear the stories of how people got into cartooning and you realize how different the world was in those days.
Yeah, wow. It was the 70s and it was Canada, but still...
I mean, that's kind of the cartoon equivalent of, like, being discovered working as a waitress in a cocktail bar, you know? Like,
yeah.
all these people, like, you know, Kathy Jezizowitz just being like, yeah, I was just drawing these, these little doodles while I was an ad executive. My mom sent them in. Or Gary Larson being like, I was, I was a music store clerk, and I was like, yeah, why not? I'll just, you know, do this thing. I mean, it's incredible when you look. Do we know anything about how Jim Davis got into cartooning? Now I'm curious.
He was a local cartoonist with the Muncie newspaper, and that's where he got started with the comic strip John that eventually evolved into Garfield. But he had actually done some political cartoons at the time. And I seem to recall that he also was an inker or something. He did artwork chores on Tumbleweeds. That's kind of where he cut his teeth. So wow. So unlike the others, he actually had some experience in cartooning before he got his own cartoon. Also, he wrote radio commercials too. That's where the name John Arbuckle came from, was that he would use it on John Arbuckle as a random name. And Odie too. He used the name Odie as the village idiot Odie, what he thought of, I don't know, honey graham crackers or whatever.
Well, I mean, that's another thing that doesn't even exist these days now. The idea of a local cartoonist in the local paper, you know? You go to the local paper and they're like, no, we get them from King Features Syndicate. There's no room for you here, you know?
Unless you have, a local free weekly. That's different.
Yeah, that can be a little different. Although a lot of them are basically, a lot of them, if they still exist, are just like, get out of here. We got Tom Tomorrow. Why do we need you? Or who's that other guy? Who's that other guy that like they have in the alt weekly? You know who I'm talking about.
Ted Rawl?
That's him. Thank you. But there's at least the possibility with an alt weekly. You might be able to get something in. The world has changed. But one thing that never changes is the Foobs. They're eternally stuck in this, the Canadian afternoon of the mid 80s. This one, it's about The basic plot is Ellie's a librarian. Did you know that? I didn't know that.
I didn't realize that either. One thing I did know watching this is that, you know, we have a lot of friends who are in fact librarians. We have two librarians who've been on the show so far, at least. And wait, both of them will probably...
Whoa. Which two?
Morb and Steph Cherrywell.
Oh. Huh. Well, I learned something today. All right, continue.
Yep. Yeah, anyway, and modern librarians will tell you that the era of the library that sounds like a tomb and everyone telling you, shh, is over, buddy.
What are libraries like today? Happening places?
Well, for one thing, you know, since a library is the only place you can go where you're not expected to spend money, a lot of group stuff happens there. You know, you might go to your local library and find people, having like a guided exercise session or something.
Hmm. Well, you know, I mean, that's why you should support your local library, you know?
Please do, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, subscribe to Canopy.
Yeah. I mean, that's why think about it. That's why the Republicans are trying to get rid of them now. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, it's the last third space left. Not for long.
And so, yeah, I guess Ellie is a librarian, and she's working full time as a librarian too, surprisingly.
Well, so, back in the '80s, I think they still had full time librarians, you know?
Yeah.
Like nowadays, everything's like, yeah, you're part time. We're not going to pay you because you're doing it because you love the job. You really mm-hmm. believe in literacy, you suckers. It's like how they cheat. It's like how they try to cheat teachers out of money too, you know?
Mm-hmm. And luckily, the teachers have a union. I'm not sure if the librarians do. When I worked at a library, we had the option of joining the union, but it was like a union for all of the city employees. So I'm not sure how specific it was to library needs. Maybe there were unions within the union for that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Yeah, I never got. I've never been in a union, so I don't know. That's why I keep losing mm-hmm. jobs. So Ellie's a librarian. She brings April to the library. April is a hellion and causes trouble.
There's the one shot of her walking away with April looking over her shoulder, and April has this look of "I'm going to destroy everything in my path."
And, yeah, that's pretty hilarious.
And then she suddenly has this terrifying frozen smile, like she's just become a saint.
Well, you know, that's how kids are.
Yes. And, I know the triangle mouths bother you. This one was a really bad example.
there's a lot of triangle mouths in this. There's also the kind of, they also do the not only the triangle mouths, but like the kind of the circle nose, straight on circle nose, which I also don't like.
Yes.
And then the that kind of goggle eyed expression that the comics curmudgeon used to call gobsmacking or being gobsmacked.
Oh yeah, when they have the bug eyes, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, that's the thing. It's like they're idiosyncratic things about Lynn Johnston's drawing style that I really do not like. But I have to, you know, I have to admit, like, it's not that she's a bad artist or anything. It's just, it's just personally, I don't care for it. But
yeah, personal choices on her part that you don't agree with. You know, always makes, for better or for worse, seems like a good example of what Scott McCloud is talking about when he describes things like, say, Carl Barks's Duck comics and Tintin as having a very distinctive world of, you know, a realistic world where everything is drawn with a lot of detail, and then the characters are very cartoony because you're supposed to identify with them, you know, because the simpler you make a character, the more someone can see themselves in it.
Yeah. No, I think that is kind of the Foob way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, the worlds they live in are very, very fully fleshed out. This is probably, I would wager that the Foob's neighborhood is a very accurate depiction of mid-80s Canada. you know.
Probably a very accurate depiction of Lynn Johnson's own neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we see, like, because, you know, they're very Canadian. They don't wear shoes in the house. You see them always in their socks, which is funny because, actually, I don't know. Like, I don't know if, because we don't wear shoes in our house here.
It's true. I always do. I just leave my Crocs on all the time. So,
yeah. See, you know, I mean, it's like, I don't think, because, like, they always say that, like, that's a Canadian thing. Like, Americans tend, I don't know, do Americans usually wear their shoes around the house? I'm not really sure.
My mother always goes around the house barefoot, but I'm not my mother.
That's not a crime, so that's all right.
Try that.
I think, like, I guess it depends. Like, obviously, like, you know, do we count slippers and stuff as shoes? Because a lot of people do that. I mean, I don't know. Mm. Or do they have different outdoor, indoor shoes? I'm not sure. It's a mystery. Mm. But anyway, the Foobs, they do not wear shoes in the house. Mm-hmm. They also have milk in bags. We don't see that in this special, but, like, it does. I have seen it in the strips.
We do see a big pile of groceries during the craving scene. I don't think there was any milk there, but
they probably bought them at a Tim Hortons. That's one of those Canadian that might be a Canadian grocery store. Now that I think about it, maybe it's not. That might Tim Hortons actually might is that a donut shop? Now I think about
it's a donut shop. Yeah, that's where Timbits come from.
Oh well, I don't know what kind of grocery stores they have in Canada. I assume
you she goes to a grocery store here.
Oh yeah, they just crossed the border.
No, I mean, they go to a grocery store in the special. Remember, she takes April to the grocery store after the library, and you get to see that they're the incredible prices from 1995, 2 for 79 cents. What?
Wow. Oh my God. Well, times have changed.
Yeah.
And you know, the Pattersons are, I mean, hey, they're a two-income household. They're probably doing pretty well in those days. Because the dad is a dentist, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, dentist, being a dentist is always paid pretty well. But when they do the flashback to before April's birth, I'm not sure if Ellie is working at all at that point. She must have gotten the library job afterward.
Yeah. No, I that's it's not really clear. It is interesting because, like, apparently April was an accident, and Ellie
was 41.
She was 41, so she was a little up there to be having a baby, you know.
Yes, it's very embarrassing to, you know, come in pregnant at age 40 and be said and have the doctor say, ah, a geriatric mother.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that. Yeah. I would not like that at all. I mean, it was funny because I was kind of watching this being like, I was trying to figure out, like, okay, so that you had it's an accident. What happened? How did this happen? Who's it? I don't know why. I was just wondering, is like, Ellie, did you forget, like, your pill? Did the condom not, did it break? Are you guys using the rhythm method? You know, like, how did this, I was just, for some reason, I was just fascinated at the idea of, like, how did the Foobs of all people, like, because they don't strike me as a sort who have, like, you know, who take any chances, you know? So how did this happen with the Foobs?
I mean, the pill is 99% effective, but that means 1 out of 100.
You see, I don't rock with the pill, you know.
Yes, withdrawal works a lot better than they say. You just have to actually do it.
I just you know. Well, I remember it was funny because, like, I remember once, like, I was at work and this girl, one of my coworkers, was having trouble getting the pill, you know, from the pharmacy because apparently the pharmacist was, like, you know, giving her guff about it. Because apparently we live in, you know, the Bible Belt here in California, so that sort of shit happens. But she was, like, having most trouble, and I was just like, and she was telling me about it, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna say something I'm gonna say something that I probably. I was like, I'm gonna say something I probably should not. It's not work appropriate. So you know, with all. So bear in mind. But I was like, just make him wear a condom. Just make him wear one. It's easier. You know, it's just easier. You don't need to. You know, because with the pill, you got to remember all this girl math about when you took it and everything. You know, and it's like, how are you supposed to remember that shit? Just put a little rubber on a dick. That's easy. That's easy to remember. And like, you can be like, oh, did I remember to put the condom on? Well, let me look down. Yes, I did. There you go. Problem solved. With the pill, you got to remember. Oh, or what if it's the other thing they do? IEDs, UIDs. You know those things?
IUDs. Yeah, those last for something like a year to 9 months, and they go under your. Those last for like 5 years. I was thinking of. You know, with the thing that goes under your arm, I don't even remember what that's called anymore.
Ooh, yeah. See, I mean, I feel like that's like, oh, they got to do something to implant it inside you? Ooh, mm-hmm. I don't know about that. I mean, you know what? Do whatever you need to do. You know, be responsible in, you know, how you're doing it. But I'm just saying that, like, I think the best, well, you know what? You probably want to combine methods, actually. You know, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. You take the pill and an IUD. And you put a condom on, and you pull out before you're done. Therefore, nothing. There you go. And you do it on the rhythm method. So now you got five things working for you. So anyway, you're welcome, America. Now you know how not to have a baby. Avoid the boobs mistake.
This is more important than ever in this world. Yes.
Yeah, I mean that is more important than ever, considering like you know the way this country's going, because like you know, so stock up on your birth control while you still can, because otherwise, because soon we're gonna get to the moment where if you don't want a baby, you're just gonna have to do it all in the butt, you know, that's the way.
We're gonna get to the moment where if you don't want to have a baby, too bad. Here come you've got a gun to your head. Now have that baby.
Yeah, you. You must have, yeah. Unfortunately, yes, that's what's gonna happen. It's like, oh, you want? I think you know what, everyone.
You either eat the pickles and ice cream, or you eat lead.
Yeah. Oh. See. Anyway, boy, we're getting real dark here today, but not inaccurate.
No.
Anyway, if you don't want to have a baby, it's time to become gay. Be gay. Whoa. Be gay. No babies. Don't have a baby then. You don't have a baby because, like, you know, I mean, you could have a baby, but like, you know, it's less likely.
Yes. Thank God.
I mean, that's what I've heard. That it's less likely if you have gay intercourse.
But not
there's less likelihood of a baby. Oh. Okay. Anyway, the foods.
I mean, I know an awful. I have an awful lot of friends. You know, We have a lot of trans friends between the two of us, and I know an awful lot of intersex people, some of whom are surprised to find how fertile they are in one direction that they weren't expecting. So.
Oh, yeah, you're right, actually. I guess I can't make that blanket statement. Boy, you know,
you never
modern
know.
Life, modern life, that's, wow, what a time to be alive. There's so much happening. Interesting times, I guess. Anyway, but the foobs. Speaking of interesting times, the foobs. So they have a baby. There's a bunch of pregnancy scenes of Ellie kind of like waddling around with her like hands on the small of her back, kind of thrusting her belly out and like, you know, doing the pregnant walk. And it's like, okay, this is pretty good. This is good.
Yeah.
I especially
like how she looks like she's 9 months pregnant when they're doing the Halloween costume scene. And then we fast forward to like, she was already that huge. And then there was like 5 more months to go.
She carries big.
Yeah. Oh man. You know, introduce me to some of these Pattersons sometime. And also, the scene where Ellie is looking at herself in the mirror and going, I can't believe how fat I am, pale and ugly. And John comes up behind her and she's like, what the hell were you staring at? He goes, I was just thinking about how beautiful you are. That's a true story. That's apparently something that, that Lynn Johnson's husband actually said to her. So,
that was back back in the days before the divorce.
Yes. No, obviously there was no, this was not during any pregnancy with April, because there is no April, but you know what I mean.
So they were still together at the point that April was born in the strip, it seems.
Yeah.
I assume.
Yeah, but I think the divorce happened some 10 years after that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay, so very late in the Phoebe's tenure, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. So... yeah, it took a while for her to, finally shake this guy off, to be able to make enough money with her cartooning career to be like, okay, I've had enough of you. I'm going to ditch you for that helicopter pilot.
Did Ellie initiate the divorce? I mean, not Ellie, sorry, Lynn Johnston?
I don't know, actually. I would have to, let's look it up. We do have the sum total of all knowledge at our fingertips.
I mean, it definitely would put everything in a very different light of, you know, the subsequent degeneration of John as a character, which one of them initiated the divorce. I'd be curious.
Well, let's see. I think I finally found an article. Oh, no. Oops, that page can't be found. Oh, I remember when the internet was forever. Not anymore.
Not anymore. Thanks a lot, Elon.
Yeah. For better or for worse, lives on while cartoons. Lynn Johnston pursues new rivers. Well, it looks like she moved back to her hometown in 2014, several years after retiring the strip. Doesn't say anything about that. Apparently they're cutting out the parts with cigarettes in the repeat strips. Yeah, she says, we have to do some editing, we have to put helmets on the skiers, we have to put seatbelts in people's cars, we remove cigarettes if somebody's smoking. But she's saying she was excited in 2021 when the Lawrence story was coming back up again. So,
so
at least
good.
They're not changing that part, yeah.
Yeah. Let's see.
What's it say on? Okay. What's it say on her Wikipedia page?
Oh well, here according to this LiveJournal page, it says the news that Rod Johnston, Rod Johnston,
2007, yeah, Rod Johnston. Wow, Rod the penis like, Johnston.
That's funny. I'm sorry. That sounds like one of those old T-shirts. You remember those? Like, you could do anything if you got a Rod Johnston. So the news that Rod Johnston had met someone else was a devastating shock to Lynn, whose millions of fans thought her long marriage, like the long marriage of Ellie and John, was storybook in nature. It shows our family was as vulnerable as anyone, she said during a phone interview with ENP. There was a silver lining of sorts in the break of the marriage, which will probably officially end in divorce next April. Speaking of April, Johnston, who's feeling much better about the separation than she did this spring, has been devoting more time to her hybrid comic than initially planned. She also intends to continue doing so, meaning there'll be no new in the new old, for better or for worse, than anyone could have expected. The sudden change in my life has given me a lot more need to focus on my work, said Johnston, who noted that one reason she had wanted to stop doing for better or for worse was to share retirement with Rod, who had ended his career as a dentist. Indeed, Johnston, 60, had originally wanted to halt For Better or For Worse completely. Universal Press Syndicate, which distributes 1979, launched comic to more than 2,000 papers, suggested the comic go into reruns. Johnston came with a hybrid idea. She blah, blah, blah. Okay, so it sounds like Rod ran off with someone else.
Yeah, okay.
It sounds like it was happening literally just as Forever or For Worse was kind of winding down. So...
So maybe the idea of David coming across as stupider wasn't as more in the eye of the reader than in Lynn Johnston's own eye.
It might be. I mean, it's possible there was difficulty in the marriage before that, you know, that was creeping in. I mean, it says she was pretty surprised about this, but who knows, you know. She may have been more aware than she realized, but
yeah.
Let's see. It says Gartuna said she initially had a lot of trouble drawing John after Rod left a real life marriage, but finally the quote spell was broken and she was able to do it. Well. Well, you know, now I want to look up and see the genesis for the "my mom is fucking crazy" thing that April said, because
yeah,
let me see, is Google, can you still Google something like that? Will that tell us what's going on? "My mom is fucking crazy," for better or for worse. The only podcast where you can hear people live Googling. no, I don't want... Oh, let's see. No, apparently too many people have said "my mom is fucking crazy." I can't find it.
Too bad. Well, no, man, there's just such an epidemic of crazy moms.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the modern world for you. But anyway, the Foobs. What else can we say about this? April gets born in the middle of a big storm. That's kind of the main yes. plot of this Foob thing.
Yeah, hence the. Yeah, hence the actual title, "A Storm in April." Let's see. Other things to draw attention to. Taking Ellie to a surprise baby shower that appears to take place on Sesame Street. You know, yeah, he takes her up the steps of this brownstone apartment, and I just felt like Oscar the Grouch is going to pop out as like, "Maria, you're looking huge."
They've got like a lot of a lot of Canadian tenements, I guess.
I guess it would be Sesame Park, wouldn't it? But so after a whole bunch of reminiscing about Ellie's pregnancy, we get to the part where it's on April 1st, March 31st, there's a surprise freak storm that covers everything in ice. And now we get, this is where I learned, it's like, okay, this is why Canadians have a reputation for being so friendly. Because if you don't let people stay over at your house, they're going to die.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually thought that was interesting, because that would not happen in America, you know?
No, in America, we have that sort of "what about Bob" thing. It's like, I can't go home in this rain. Borrow my slicker!
Yep, yep. Because, yeah, someone, like, I think John's, who is that guy? His boss or something? Who's, you know,
I guess,
better sleep over at my place.
Yeah, who is that guy? Home? I don't even know. I'm his boss, or maybe another dentist he shares the practice with. I don't really know how dentistry works as far as owning your own business. Yeah. I know that my own dentist, like, owns everything about his office, even, like, the mineral rights. So if he discovered oil, it would belong to him. But, damn. Yeah.
I'm thinking ahead.
John was planning on staying over with a friend who I guess was going to put him up on the couch or something. And yeah. Ellie is feeling the first stirrings of labor, but she doesn't recognize it as such, which is weird because she's been through this twice before. And she tells the kids it's okay to get pizza, and the pizza guy doesn't feel safe coming back, so he's just eating pizza on the couch with them afterward.
Yeah, and, like, I actually thought that was interesting, because at first I was like, wow, Michael is a huge asshole, because he's like, "Oh, let's order from this pizza place where if it takes more than 30 minutes, it's free, because look how awful it is outside. You know, this yeah. guy is going to be risking his life to bring us a pizza, and we can rip him off, you know?" And it's like,
so
wow,
you endangered this poor pizza guy. Yeah.
Yeah. But then when the pizza guy shows up with extra pizza and is like, "I can't deliver any more pizza because the storm's too bad," and they're just, "Yeah, just hang out here and eat some pizza with us." I was like, okay, that's fair. That's good.
Yeah.
The Foobs have redeemed themselves.
Yeah, they did. And I especially like when John finally gets home and he's like, he's like, "My God, my wife is in labor. I hope they've got someone competent to take care of it." And he sees the pizza delivery guy parked in there.
Yeah, I especially like the big "we deliver" sign.
Yeah.
Which I thought was pretty good. That was kind of the punchline of the whole special, which was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Luckily, Ellie knows some nurses, so they come over and help.
Yeah.
Which I guess is like, I guess if you're in Canada in the 80s, you know people, you know your neighbors, yeah. You have friends. Not like in America in 2024, where we're all just, it's like, I don't know anyone in this fucking town. If I had a baby, I'd die. Good thing I don't.
We don't need to, we don't need any nurses to help teach us this stuff. We've got YouTube. We can have someone, we can just watch this video on how to catch babies.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Finger family will teach me everything I need to know about, like, having a baby.
Wait, no, they won't. How could the Finger family have a baby? There's only five fingers.
Well, oh, no. Well, luckily, boy. Anyway, that's why we didn't have a baby here, Also, you could have a home. Also, in Canada, you can have a home birth. Like in America, I think that's illegal.
I was a home birth, but.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't say that on air. You're going to get in trouble.
Sorry.
No, I was a home birth. Come to your house and be like, hey, we heard there was a home birth here like 40 years ago. someone's better pay us now. Pay up.
Well, you don't know what address it was at. It wasn't this house, so.
Oh, it was like, well, we'll just look for the house with no numbers. We'll take the numbers of my neighbor's house. We'll look for the house next to the house with no numbers. All right, y'all get your birth money.
I'll give you the birth call, if that's what you want.
I guess it was a good thing I wasn't the home birth, because I was a cesarean, so.
Yeah, that's what you don't want in the event of a home birth. If you're going to have a home birth, you need to have, somebody who is experienced at baby catching and that kind of thing. And you want to have a backup plan if it turns out that something goes really wrong, because it can. Because, in countries that have more home births do, in fact, tend to have more maternal deaths. So,
yeah.
And I believe that's kind of contrary to what you want. I could be wrong, depending on the husband.
I think it's probably bad. But, America, don't worry. We're trying to ramp up those numbers on maternal deaths, America looked at the number of maternal deaths. They're like, those are rookie numbers. We need more, my mom had three cesareans. So they were all in hospitals, which is funny because I think I mentioned before, like as a child, I thought that's how babies were born. I thought babies just come out through the stomach
wall. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the alien, so
I think the movie Alien has, tainted people's idea of pregnancy forever. But yep. I mean, pregnancy was the inspiration for the movie Alien in the first place. So it's not like it wasn't.
But yeah, well, the thing is, like, I was always wondering, like, man, in ancient times, like, you have a baby, you just die, because that's the baby just like eats its way out, So I was
that's
like,
what some spiders did.
Yeah, so I was like, well, it's a good thing they invented hospitals so that I'm gonna do this, but yeah, but anyway, she was fine. She had a very narrow rib cage, which apparently is what necessitated the cesarean. So they knew ahead of
time. Wow, your mom is Hank Hill.
Yeah, she was all, and then when I was born, she was like, no, boy, ain't right. So the Floobs, there's a storm. They have, I don't remember who these characters are that are nurses, but I think they're from the strip. I think we've probably seen them before.
Yeah, and, at least one of them is a nearby neighbor whose kids are Elizabeth's best friends. I'm not sure about the other one.
Yeah. Then I guess April is born, and the Froobs reminisce about how kids grow up too fast because Elizabeth and Michael are like, we're leaving. Because we've got to do stuff on the weekends, and Ellie and John are like, oh, well, we have baby April here with us. It is nice.
It is nice, yeah. I mean, if you like parenting, it's a good thing to do. I mean, I feel that a lot of people become parents for the wrong reason. You know, one, because by default is one of the worst possible reasons, because, oh, we couldn't get rid of the baby, so now we're just raising it.
Yeah.
And another bad reason is to take over the family business, or to live my life over again, or to have someone who will love me no matter what. That's a really bad one. In fact, one of the only really good reasons to be a parent is because the experience of parenting is fun. You know, you can ask my dad. His friends were like, "Where are you when I was born?" He's like, "I'm playing with my son. None of you told me that being a dad was so much fun."
Well, that's good. You know, it is definitely, it's an experience, you know. I'm not a dad, but, you know, it's nice to, you know, watching this, it makes me think about, like, yeah, it's definitely one of the unique experiences in life.
Yes.
And,
you know, it's an experience in life that we would miss if it went away, if we had babies raised to age 18, untouched by human hand.
Yeah. Well, just wait for the future is coming.
You know, the future is getting a little too close in my eyes, honestly. And, you know, the thing about, we mentioned before that because, you know, April is not based on any one character, and or any one real person. And the truth is that Lynn Johnson was not sure about introducing her at all, and we've mentioned before, it was actually her friend and confidant, Kathy Geiswhite, who said, "So what if you don't have a family member to base her on? It's a cartoon. Make it up." Which suggests, and I think I might not be totally off base here, that Lynn was sort of thinking, maybe I'd better have another baby so I can introduce one into the comic. And that doesn't seem like a great reason to have a baby either. But
that legitimately probably is one of the worst reasons. But it would be funny because, I'm sorry, I mean, it would be very tragic in a way, but like that would make me like, oh, I wanted a new baby in the comics, so I had a new baby in real life. That's like the 1980s comic equivalent of being like a mommy blogger, you know, or one of those people who just like films their kids for YouTube, you know. Well, I'm glad that Kathy Geiswhite's talked some sense into her, because, you know, that would not be a good scene. Especially like, well, at that point, maybe the marriage was rocky and there was that, and there was like too many people that thought like, oh, we can save it by having a baby, you know?
Oh, that's another one of those bad reasons to have a baby. You know, there's a lot of bad reasons to have a baby.
Boy. Yeah. You know, I feel like, there are a lot. Yeah. Most people, I mean, in all honesty, most people probably should not have kids. Most people are really bad at it. You know, you don't know what you're doing. You're just kind of whiffling it because there's no, you know, all, you know, the only guidebook you have is like, okay, what did my own parents do for me? And chances are your own parents really fucking sucked at it, because have you seen what most people do? It's terrible.
How many people will make, you know, impassioned arguments for why they should be allowed to hit their kids?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a bad scene, you know?
Yeah. You probably saw that great Tumblr post about how they found that not only does hitting your kids work worse because it teaches your kids not to trust you, but literally anything where you just make the kids sit and think about the situation is good if it's couched as a punishment. Because there's one family where when their toddler gets in trouble, they make him put on a blue hat. And just because it is couched as a punishment, he's like, "No, not the hat!"
I mean, you know, you do not need to beat your children, you know?
No.
That's what it comes, you know.
Please do not beat your children. My God. Yeah, if one person doesn't beat their children because they listen to our podcast, it'll all have been worth it.
I mean, you know, hey, so here's something that I've been thinking about lately, right? This may be TMI, okay? But like, you know, my parents, I love my parents, And I think they did a fairly good job, mm-hmm. you know? Obviously, they didn't know what they were doing, but, you know, they muddled through, right?
I think they did a good job. They made someone that I like, at least.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And, you know, I'm just saying, so, you know, but one of the things I remember when I was a small child, my dad mentioned that when he was a kid, you know, mm-hmm. his mother, when he was naughty, she would pick him up by his hair, like lift him Ooh. Off the ground by his hair and whip him with a belt. Right. And he always,
fuck?
He told
the
Sorry.
I said the fuck.
Yeah. Now that was, you know, in the '40s or so that was, or fifties, you know, a long time ago, a different time. Not good even back then, not good ever. But the thing is, when I was a kid, he told me that story, and he always told it like as this joke. It was a funny story, right? And he was like, "Oh, she picked me up off the ground, and it'd be like the red strap, and it'd be like, oh, not the red strap, as if the red strap being red made it worse." And you know, we were all, and as kids, we're like, "Oh, it's such a funny story that you're telling," because he told it very jokey, right? And then I didn't think about that story for many years, and then at a certain point, I thought, and I remembered it, and I was like, that's not a funny story at all. That's an extremely fucked up story that he went through.
Yeah.
But it also made me realize the fact that, like, oh, he was telling that story to me as a joke. He told it to me in a very lighthearted fashion because he didn't want to upset me. He didn't want me to think of, you know, my father being hurt, right? Because he knew that would be hard for me, you know? And it also made me realize the fact that as a child, I thought that was funny because I could not conceive of him doing that to me. You know, it was beyond the pale. No way that something like that could ever happen to me. So, you know, it was so beyond my own experience, you know, that I could hear that and not put it together how awful that really was, you know. And so as an adult, when I realized that, I was like, man, you know, that actually made me think a lot that, like, he went through that experience. He was abused, and he did not repeat that with his kids, you know, at all. Which, you always hear about cycles of abuse. People, you know, the way they were raised, they kind of think that's the way to raise their own kids. And it made me realize, no, I think he made a very conscious decision not to raise us the way that he was raised. Nice. And, you know, it was not something that I really appreciated or even understood until I was an adult. And I think a lot of people probably don't even understand or appreciate that sort of thing until they have kids themselves, maybe, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe if I had kids, I would have realized this a lot sooner in life. But, you know, it was just
it's jarring to imagine the thought that, you know, my father was strong enough to not pass this along. You know, if I had had kids, would I have been strong enough not to recognize this and not pass it along?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a weird feeling. It's a weird thing to think about. But, saying that, like, if some people, they have kids and they're good at it, you know. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, love my parents, and I think, you know, they were probably pretty good at it, it seems like. But anyway, yeah. So that's why are we talking about child abuse again? I'm trying to remember why we got into this topic.
I'm not sure. How did we get onto the subject of hitting your kids? But now, because thankfully I don't think that ever comes up, and for better or for worse. I mean, there are times when Ellie comes across as a bit of a nag. There are times when she, you know, does the thing where she towers over the kids, shaking her finger, that kind of thing. But, you know, I'm not sure if there's any, for better or for worse, story that involves, you know, actual spanking or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, I don't know.
It's a weird thing to imagine because it's so normalized for some people that, you know, they divide these arbitrary lines of what's abuse and what isn't. It's like, yeah, I mean, you know, punching your kids is bad, but what about popping them? It's like, popping? The fuck is popping? Like a bubble? What are you talking about?
What is that about? Is that like smacking them in the face or something?
No. I asked this of someone on Twitter and they didn't respond. I was like, what is popping? It's like, they're just like, you know, popping, you know, everyone does that, right? It's like, no, what the fuck is it?
I mean, I think when they realized when you were like asking, like, and they had, when they had to explain it, I think they suddenly realized, like, uh-oh, I may be confessing to something that I shouldn't be confessing to.
Yeah. I was trying to fathom it, and I was like, you know, the more literal it gets, the worse it sounds. I was like, what, your parents inflate you and then burst you? What the fuck?
Oh, how very sexy. I'm sure there's a lot of, like, DeviantArt. Oh, my yes. God. That's like that one guy on DeviantArt that, like, for some, who's all like, this is my family, and I, with head inflation, my head inflation family. It's like, okay.
Great. Just what we wanted.
Weird. Yeah.
Just what we needed. Like, Beauregard BDSM.
Oh, man. What a world, you know? But luckily, none of this happens in the foobs. It's a pretty, no.
For all of the weird, for the strange connection between the real world Johnston family and the comics world Patterson family, you know, the Pattersons are good people. I would like to have them on my block for the most part. You know,
yeah,
it's sort of weird. Another, you know, it's weird. Farley is in this, and you know, I think he died the year this came out, so that must have been kind of painful.
Oh, that's right. But he died when April was a little bit older. So this is,
yes.
So the cartoon continuity is a few years behind the comic continuity.
Yeah, I don't think this was an episode of a series. I think this was still a special. There is a For Better or For Worse series, but I've never quite gotten a handle on how it works. Because I think it was just like segments from the show, from the comics, in no particular order. Kind of like the Charlie Brown and Snoopy show.
Oh, I didn't know there was a series. I thought it was only specials. Mm-hmm.
I think the series never made it across the northern border, so.
I'm going to be a little mean, but I can't imagine a For Better or For Worse series would be very interesting, because,
yeah.
I mean, you know, if the specials were anything to go on, these are extremely low-stakes stories, you know?
Yeah.
They're extremely just like, here's a relatable family incident for you to, like, you know, be like, yeah, that's the way it be, you know?
Yep. That's how it is. Sometimes your son says something snippy about your enormous belly while you're trying to help someone with a costume, and then you have to just stand there looking embarrassed for a second and, whoo, oh, what was I saying?
Just looking gobsmacked, you know?
But that's another thing, is that, I mean, like I said, it sounded like there was sort of the entertaining the notion of, you know, of a third member of the Johnston household, you know, as opposed to just creating one for the Patterson household. But there's this one cartoon that she drew for a For Better or For Worse retrospective with Ellie and John lying in bed saying, wouldn't it be wonderful? So it sounds like she might have really did want to have a third baby later in life. And this was her substitute for it. And I think about this, as our own country, as certain states come closer and closer to making it impossible to get get test tube babies born. And this, you know, Lynn Johnston, very well paid, married to like a dentist or something, a successful cartoonist, even she could not justify having that third baby, you know. And you want to make it harder? You want to make it harder on people who actually do want to have babies? Fuck you guys!
Well, we do live in an extremely stupid country.
We sure fucking do. Do we cut there, or what? Did I lose you?
Oh, hello? Uh-oh. Sorry? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, it faded out for a second there. Well, I guess the question is there anything else we should say about the foobs?
Well, Well, oh, one funny thing is that for quite a while, this was only available to, like, purchase directly from the For Better or For Worse website.
Huh.
So, yeah. So there were the For Better. That's why I didn't do it. We didn't do it because I was like, eh, I don't want to drop $5 on an MP4 of A Storm in April. And I guess somebody did it, and it's been on YouTube for a while now since. But what's really funny is that for much longer than this was available on YouTube, there's been a supercut of all the pregnancy scenes. So, yeah, we know... Lynn knows where the bread is buttered.
Well, you know what? I mean, yeah, good on her. Good on her. It's like, you know, she's like, oh, Kevin and Kel, he's coming for me. Well, you come for the queen, you best not miss. You know?